right down the right side. 5 seconds, crossover dribble to the rim, coast to coast with a dunk. 51-35.
Tim Roy, the voice of the Warriors on the Golden State Radio Network. Why was that basket notable? 51-35, the score? That was in the first quarter, kids. Nuggets scored another three-pointer. There was 89 total points scored in that first quarter by both teams, 51 of them by the Golden State Warriors. A new record for a first quarter. They went on to win the game easily. In that first quarter alone, Kevin Durant, 7 of 7, hit all three of his three-pointers. You heard that dunk. He had 17 points. Klay Thompson had 13 points. Steph Curry had 12 points. They had three players in double figures in the first quarter.
Yeah, 51 points in the first quarter. That was 10 three-pointers, you said?
Yeah, 10 out of 14, 19 out of 25 right. From the floor. They only shot four free throws.
Can I say something right now before it gets out of my head? We just heard Vertigo coming back, and you once asked the question, why does U2 count 1, 2, 3, 14? I actually read about that a couple weeks ago. Bono was in Mexico at the time and just flat-out claims there was alcohol involved. alcohol involved.
Yeah, but what does that mean?
I don't know.
They don't perform the song live. Like, they recorded the song, and somebody could have said, Bono.
Right. Bono.
Go over here, mate.
Quattro.
Yeah. No, right. The last time alcohol was involved with me, I still remembered how to count.
Right.
I think. I might be wrong
about that. Some other motor skills, maybe not
that
so
was
much.
That was the perfect lead-in, because that's what the Nuggets had to be thinking last night. Is like, oh, there's 1-3. Right. Oh, there's 2-3s.
There's three.
3-3s. And now they're all the way up to 14-3.
That's true. That's
just like
point.
That. They skipped from 3 to 14.
All right. So Vinny's been saying this for a while. Vinny's been saying that the 200-point barrier in the NBA, it's going to fall one of these nights. Now, it could happen. It's like that Kobe 81-point game came out of nowhere. It was like, uh-oh, someone's getting close to a hundy. For a team to get to 200 points, I have said it'll never happen, because there's two things that have to happen for that to occur. Number one, you're going to have to keep playing your players deep into a game that you're probably pulverizing the other team. And that breaks an unwritten rule. Number two, you're trying to stat pad. That breaks an unwritten rule in the NBA. There's going to be guys in the other team who will be taking physical offense to what you're trying to do. So as a team, you're going to have to be really, really committed. But I used to think there's no way it's ever going to happen because of that. Because at some point in time, a head coach is going to go, okay, call him in, wave off the dogs, no more. I've kind of come around to your way of thinking now, just based on the way way the NBA is going. And B, just the arc and the narrative of the Golden State Warriors over the course of their championship run. They started off as America's darlings. Everybody loved the Golden State Warriors. Cute, cuddly, Steph Curry, all that stuff. Then Draymond Green came along, and then Kevin Durant happened, and then not so much. I think the Warriors are in a headspace right now where they don't give a hoot at all about perception, unwritten rules. I think if they're in 140-ish after a third quarter, I think now they're going to go for it.
I'd like to see it, just because we haven't seen it before. You can talk about the 100-point half. We've seen that before. The Suns actually hold that record. They had 107 points and a half in the early 90s. About this, I tend to think those unwritten rules in basketball would win out. Mm-hmm. I saw something, and you see it more and more frequently now. Teams on a last possession, when they're down, when they're losing the game, they don't even take the opportunity to stat pad anymore. Denver was down the other night against the Suns. They crossed midcourt, and they held the ball. Why shouldn't you shoot it there? People don't like...
Yeah.
I mean, those unwritten rules are growing and growing. The only way I could see it happening is if you got... a coach, let's say you got close, the pace was there, they're still blowing out, you have to finish the game. The only way that could really happen is if the guys at the end of your bench came in and remained as hot as the starters.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're probably going against bench players, so maybe it's possible. But last night, 51 points in a quarter. That's on pace for 200 points.
But that's how crazy 200 points is.
Yeah.
You have to do that four times.
Was it a statement that the Warriors were making, Steph Curry?
I think we're way past making statements. We understand what type of team we are and what we're capable of. So there's no doubt in our locker room. When we play like we did tonight, we're the best team in the league, and we got to continue to get better.
Maybe it was a statement that Klay Thompson had four dunks in that game.
Yeah.
not exactly known for his dunks. Here was Steve Kerr, the head coach, talking about what he saw from his team.
I figured our guys would be excited to play. You know, we lost last time we were here, and this team is ahead of us in the standings, and, you know, we had a chance to catch them tonight. So I was hoping our guys would be excited, but, you know, you never know. But they came in focused and ready to roll, obviously.
That a head coach in the NBA talking about his team and how they were ready to play.
Yeah. Oh, how about that?
That's refreshing.
Yeah. Oh, that's very, very refreshing.
There's been games this year where the Suns haven't had 51 points into the third quarter.
True.
And I'm watching some of the highlights as we talk of the Suns last night, and I'm getting even more
no,
angry.
No, you're not.
I'm getting even more angry with them.
Because there was no highlight.
This whole idea of a defensive identity, they're a joke the way they played defense last night. A joke.
Give them one more game and see if it happens again.
All right, fine.
But I agree. You touched on something that about the Warriors' perception, how everybody loved them at first and now nobody likes them, it seems like. What was the last dynasty that everyone really liked? Was it Jordan's Bulls?
Yeah.
It feels like the Yankees, the Patriots.
Wait, did you just say everybody liked Jordan's Bulls?
So that's not...
No, I hated those Bulls teams.
We've already had this argument. We don't need to go back down this path. But what Jarrett is saying is fundamentally accurate, that as far as a dynasty goes, the Bulls were remarkably, almost universally liked, if not loved. There was a pocket of people who hated them. You're among them.
I'm not even leaning to almost universally liked.
Okay.
You were submerged in it.
I know.
So,
I know that.
I understand that stance.
I know that.
But no.
Well, he didn't.
But Jordan was a different. Even players, people that didn't like Michael Jordan, they marveled at it.
Who didn't like Michael Jordan? You didn't like Michael Jordan as a player? You're kidding me.
We've had this discussion.
How
before.
Did Michael Jordan become a billionaire just on peddling shoes if people didn't love him?
He was a great player.
Right.
He was a transcendent talent.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm in the minority. I don't look at who the next player is and root who I'm going to base who I'm going to root for because he plays on that team.
Okay.
I was frustrated at that time. My team was really good and couldn't get over the hump, and he was a big part of the reason why.
I kind of like the way he said that, though, because you mentioned the Yankees dynasty. Do you know the Yankees last dynasty? They were actually a team that people admired. Scott Brosius, Tito Martinez.
Only at first, though.
I don't.
Andy Pettit.
Nah, but see, once they were there every year, people were so sick of them, and then they started buying the players, the Mike Mussinas and Jason Giambis, and people hated it.
The Yankees have always been hated.
Roger Clemens.
Yeah.
The Patriots, of course, the Cowboys. During their heyday, people were sick of them.
And the Patriots started off as the Patriots when they
that
beat,
first year.
That
yep.
first year.
You were the
that?
Underdogs. That's why.
Well, I remember because I covered that game. It was in New Orleans against Kurt Warner's Rams. That year, Bill Belichick refused to have one of his teams, one of his units, take the field and not the other side. So everybody came out. And it was like, oh, they're the perfect team. We love this team. The Detroit Pistons, when they won the NBA championship with Ben Wallace, Chauncey Billups, Rip Hamilton. Who am I missing from that team?
Rasheed Wallace.
Oh, yeah.
Tayshaun Prince.
Sheed. Yeah. That team.
Darko Milicic.
Right. That team was embraced for being no superstars, no egos. It's that stuff doesn't last long. We're weird in America.
The last dynasty everybody loved was the one with John Forsythe and Linda Evans, babe.
Babe.
Crystal Carrington, babe. Nobody loves dynasties unless you're a fan of that team.
Mm-hmm.
The Yankees are the most hated franchise in sports.
Which is funny because in individual sports, everybody loved Tiger Woods.
Again.
And everybody.
No.
You don't think so? During his heyday?
Yes, during his heyday. Yeah.
No, I think he was divisive. to a degree.
Didn't everybody love Mike Tyson in his heyday?
And they were fascinated by him.
Everyone loved Michael Phelps.
Well, like, yeah, that's pretty universal.
Or Usain Bolt. Like, people do love individual dominance.
Yeah.
But not so much team dominance.
It's a good point.
Because I guess because you root more for teams locally, and you don't really have individuals that you like more than other individuals,
yeah.
Maybe.
I mean, I guess rule of thumb on fandom might be different from everybody else's. I like my teams and my team's players, and I pretty much hate everybody else.
Okay. The Mike Tyson thing is interesting because people always say love is universal. What everybody on this planet understands is force. Fear, being afraid of somebody who's bigger, strong. Everybody understands force.
Yeah.
And that Mike Tyson, it was just the raw fear. It was like, that guy is terrifying. I remember being in Mike Tyson's house in Vegas with a select member of, and here I go name dropping, but Don King invited some
media. Were you trying to take a tiger back?
That's funny. Don King invited some media people over to Mike Tyson's house. And I remember sitting on a couch in his living room in Vegas going, I hope he took his meds tonight. Because he was upstairs at the time. He hadn't come down yet. And when he came down, everybody was like, okay, does he even know there are media people in his house? Is he going to go nuts when he sees there are media people in his house? And he couldn't have been nicer that night. Here you go, Evander. I'm sorry. Jarrett. I put that in a tea for you.
He might, moving away from like embracing it, maybe the most fascinating athlete in his prime ever.
Completely agree.
Yeah.
Completely agree. And I kind of miss that. I don't know why. Mike Tyson was just, you couldn't take your eyes off the guy.
Yeah, because he was such a brute in the ring, and then you'd hear him talk
right,
and passionately about the sport and the sense of history he had for the sport, and he would get into some deep conversations, and then the next time you heard from him, he's telling a reporter where to go, and
yeah,
using foul language, and just an overall, you never knew what you were going to get from him.
Calling people a scared coward. Love that. That was redundancy at its finest.
That was.
Scared coward.
From the Department of Redundancy Department.
Right.
Join Burns and Gambo tomorrow as they broadcast live from the 48th annual Barrett Jackson Collector Car Auction at Westworld of Scottsdale. You can check out more than 1,700 rare and exotic cars up for auctions. Eat and drink from the 40-plus vendors on site and much, much more. Head to the events page at arizonasports.com for details and info on tickets.
Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Former Coyotes forward and current Yotes color analyst Paul Bissonnette. Brought to you by Coors Light. This season we climb. Proud partner of the Arizona Coyotes.
Coyotes back from their Canadian swing. They won two, blown out in the third game. Here to talk about it with us, Paul Bissonnette, Coyotes radio analyst here on Bickley and Murata. Biz, how are you, man?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
We were just having a discussion away from hockey for a second about the concept of dynasties because of what Golden State has got going in basketball. And there was a suggestion that dynasties, you know, fans don't like team dynasties. But they like individual sport dynasties and dominance. Were you a fan of like dominant hockey teams growing up that had a dynasty, or you know, or is there a specific individual athlete that you were fascinated by?
I mean, that's a tough question because I mean, other than like what the Islanders were, I wasn't around for, and then Edmonton
after that.
As far as hockey's concerned, there was no one really who was that dominant for that long. I mean, you look at Chicago and what they did past the cap era. Like, to me, I guess you consider that a dynasty because they ended up winning three cups there in the span of 6 years. And, I mean, to me, that's remarkable in how they kept reloading and finding a way to be good. So, I mean, and at the time, I thought it was the Coyotes. So, no, I was not thrilled about that. But in regards to the basketball situation, I mean, it's almost like a bot dynasty. I mean, it seems a little bit tainted. Would you agree?
Well, I agree. Now, the roots of it, I mean, it started before it was bought because Kevin Durant wasn't there yet when they won their first championship. But I definitely feel that way. And I think most people now outside of the Bay Area feel that way, too.
I think it would have been a lot more interesting if he would have went somewhere else or stuck with with the Thunder, because then it would have made things a lot more interesting and competitive. Just the minute he joined them, it just kind of was like, oh, God, they just give it to him.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, what players, I mean, let me twist this a little bit. What players in hockey, as a player, were really popular to the outside world, but you guys inside the game knew that person was either disingenuous, a phony, or a jerk? You know what I mean? Guys that you just roll your eyes at.
You're asking me who's a phony in the NHL?
Exactly.
I wouldn't even know, and I wouldn't even go there if I had an answer. It's a good question, but I mean, you're trying to stir stuff up now.
Well, why wouldn't I? You're Paul Bissonnette. You're great. You go places hockey players don't go.
And I'm being dead serious when I say I don't really have anyone off the top of my head who – are you talking in regards to, like, who kind of stabbed his team in the back? I mean,
No. People, not necessarily. Or, guys who put on a front to come off as super nice guys to the media – not necessarily the media, but to the fans. Guys who were really, really popular, who guys inside the game knew were really actually kind of jerk faces.
He's never going to answer.
I'm not going there. I came on to talk Coyotes, and you want clickbait or what do you call that?
Yeah, says the guy who went to the top of a mountain and dumped a bucket of water over his head.
Not a chance I'm going there. Rich Nair would chop my head off.
All right, to the hockey. Here's a hockey question from here. Have you ever scored a goal with your face, Biz?
No, that was pretty impressive, though. I mean, I would have took one off the face for a goal. But that was pretty remarkable. Connor Garland, one of the awesome surprises for the Coyotes, especially in a time of need regarding the injury situation.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like every time we talk, we're just adding another one to the list. And the fact that they managed to get 4 or 6 points on that tough road trip was very impressive. And things should get interesting tonight against the hottest team in the league, the San Jose Sharks. 7 wins in a row right now. Came off a big one against Pittsburgh last night. And the good news is, though, is they did play last night, so hopefully we can get them tired.
Yeah, and you're right about that. The Brad Richardson injury, it's how do you recover from that? And it's because, especially when it's been one after another, at some point in time, how does a hockey team or any team kind of summon the strength to go, okay, we're going to fight through this too?
Well, I mean, part of it is it's like almost like the pressure's off a little bit, where it's just like, hey, like expectations are probably not where they were, considering we have 7 regulars out. And just like we talked last time, just everyone elevating their game. They had a good pickup with grabbing Jordan Wheel off waivers. In a trade. And I've actually played with Jordan Wheel. He was the MVP for our Calder Cup team when we won the championship in the American Hockey League. And, you know, hopefully he can, you know, help with the absence of Brad Richardson and just, you know, find his offense again. I know things that maybe necessarily work out for him in Philadelphia, but hopefully a change of scenery will help him here, similar to the Schmaltz situation.
Paul Bissonnette, our guest, as he is every week during hockey season here on Bickley and Murata. We touched on it, had a little fun with the face goal from Connor Garland, and you talked about him making a contribution at a real crucial time for this team. But 8 goals in 18 games, I mean, do you think this is sustainable for him to be maybe a top-line scorer the rest of the way for this team?
I think if he maintains that work ethic, and I think that's been his MO for a long time. I mean, he said it when he first got here. He goes, I've found ways to produce offense at every level that I've played at. And if you look back at his hockey DB, like when he started playing junior in the Quebec Major Junior League, you know, he wasn't a scorer. He wasn't putting up, you know, significant points. And then finally in his last 2 seasons, he was able to, I think he led the league both years. He had 129 points and 128 points for his team there. We signed him, went to play in the American Hockey League with Tucson, and I mean, you know, he didn't make an impact offensively there either until the start of this year, where he really found his own. And then, of course, with all the injuries, we called him up. The first 7 games with the Coyotes this year, he didn't have a point.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he was creating scoring opportunities, but just, you know, like he said, you know, I've found a way to do it at every level. I have to find a way to do it here. No excuses. And sure enough, now he's got 8 goals. He's been buzzing, playing well. And, I mean, other than Brad Richardson, kind of like the unsung hero.
Biz, we've talked so much this year about the Coyotes. You know, they'll get hot for a stretch, then they'll completely go in the opposite direction. They haven't been able to sustain success. It's been up and down. Then you add in the injuries, again, to key players. I mean, Ronta's out. The Richardson injury. I mean, so many guys out for the year. But you look at the standings, and there's 6 points out of that second wild card spot in the West. I mean, how realistic do you still think the playoffs are for this Coyotes team this year?
Well, I'm 50-50 on it. I'm aware that in order to sustain the pace they've been playing at lately, everyone is going to have to contribute. Like, no one can have a night off because they just need all hands on deck. Crazier things have happened. You know, this is something that they've rallied around as of late. It's kind of that us against the world mentality. And, you know, getting lost in all this, too, is, you know, at the start of the year, it was a bit of a roller coaster ride. You know, we'd go on a good stretch, go on a tough stretch, go on a good stretch, a lot of peaks and valleys. And, you know, some people have been very critical of Rick Tocchet and what he's done with this team based on the scenario. I mean, if they're able to squeeze into a wild card situation based on the amount of money they're spending on the cap and with the injuries, like, he'd have to be a consideration for coach of the year. I mean, like, if this roster with all those injuries makes playoffs, like, there's no doubt he should at least be nominated, because it's insane. So overall, like, I mean, as far as attendance is concerned, people should still be supporting this hockey team. Yeah. And showing up, because they're showing a competitive spirit under the circumstances.
Sharks and Coyotes tonight from Gila River Arena. Later start tonight, 8 o'clock is the face-off. You can hear it here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Biz, thanks for the time. We'll do it again next week.
Absolutely. Good chatting with you, boys.
All right, thank you, Biz.
Paul Bissonnette, our guest every week during hockey season here on Bickley and Murata. Coming up next, talk about dynasties, broadcasting dynasty,
yeah,
coming to an end,
and
divisive figure,
and if you want breaking news, Antonio Brown has lost his mind.
Oh, we'll get into that, too.
All right. Okay, he's responded to Bruce Arians, and it's not nice.
Yes, we'll get into all of that next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
I'm Sarah Cazell with the latest from the Arizona Sports Desk, presented by MyGuy.com, Arizona's most trusted referral source. Another day, another OC candidate for the Arizona Cardinals. NFL Network's Tom Pelissero reporting that yesterday, the Cardinals interviewed longtime assistant Tom Clements for the OC opening. Clements last coached during the 2016 season, calling plays as the Packers' assistant head coach. Now, John DeFilippo, who interviewed with the Cardinals for the same job on Sunday, was hired by Jacksonville as the Jaguars OC. So now that he is off the table, that leaves Tom Clements, Jim Bob Cooter, and Ben McAdoo as the Cardinals' known OC candidates. No Suns tonight after their blowout loss to the Pacers. They play game 2 of their road trip tomorrow at the Toronto Raptors. But we do have hockey tonight. The San Jose Sharks visiting the Coyotes at Gila River Arena. Puck drop is at 8 o'clock right here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. The latest is brought to you by the Ok-Chin community. We're teaming up with Ok-Chin to give you the chance to win a VIP movie experience at the Ultrastar Multitainment Center. Just text WIN to 62620 to take the We All Win with Ok-Chin quiz for your chance to win.
Well, from afar, it's just too much miscommunication, too much diva, you know. I just don't. I've heard so many stories, and I like Antonio. He plays as hard as anybody on Sunday, and he practices hard. He's just got to make better decisions off the field, be on time, do some of those little things.
Was that the Antonio that you knew and drafted back in 2011 or whatever year it was?
He was hardest working. He and Emmanuel Sanders, boy, they went after it because Mike Thomas always telling two dogs, one bone. At that time, we had Mike Wallace, Hines Ward, and we had a pretty good room for one of them to get on the field. And by the end of the season, they were both winning for us to go to the Super Bowl.
That was Bruce Arians in a discussion on the Adam Schefter podcast about Antonio Brown, the disgruntled Pittsburgh Steelers wide receiver. The diva word got thrown out there. You said it. You said unequivocally earlier in the show, Bick. People don't like being called a diva.
No,
Antonio Brown didn't like it either.
No.
He went on Twitter Somebody had tweeted at him the Bruce Arians quote, "This isn't the Antonio that was drafted in 2010. Antonio Brown's response on Twitter, "He didn't draft me. He drafted Emmanuel Sanders, same guy who missed rehab to go on networks to talk about me on situation he have zero clue. Arians now wears Kangoo hats and glasses, crying smiley emoji. But I'm a diva. Done seen it all. Then they say we friends. Stop lying." Or lean. Lying.
Yeah, he spelled it L-I-E-N. That would be lean, Antonio Brown. Hopefully you don't have one of those on your home.
Oh, jeez.
He's supposed to say lying. Okay, look. First of
I'm
all,
not singling
who
out
missed
Antonio-
rehab? Emmanuel Sanders or Bruce Arians? Can Antonio Brown clarify that?
I think that's Sanders.
Number two, what is a Kangoo hat? A Kangoo.
Wearing glasses makes you a diva now.
Look, he's calling Bruce Arians a diva.
Oh,
but
look at that diva over there wants to see.
Well,
he's all about himself.
No, to me here to me is what he's saying. He's saying, look, BA's saying I've changed. Look at the way that guy's changed. And there are people who tell you, the way BA used to be, BA had no style. None at all. Look at the guy who
That's not what BA will tell you.
I know that. I know that. But I'm saying, you go look at the guy who coached the Indianapolis Colts.
He didn't have a goatee.
He didn't have a goatee.
He was smooth all over.
I'll say this, because BA will fight you, and he'll say, I always had style. It was only recently that his style was in style. See what I'm saying?
Okay.
Remember when he had the thick curly hair? That was not a great look.
Okay.
But he had a style.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he got under Antonio Brown's skin a little bit.
Woo. But I'm a diva. Well, it's kind of true. And the fact that he responded like this tells you that Antonio Brown is kind of left planet reality. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
All right, that was the latest.
I'd still trade for him, but that's just me. Because I'm at that point. I'm ready to sacrifice morals, character judgment, everything for a team that can score some touchdowns.
No, I mean, not everything. You're not advocating like a
no, I'm not.
Kareem Hunt
no.
or anything
no,
like
no,
that.
No.
But the guy can play football.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's proven.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued by it, the possibility. I don't think it happens. I think the Cardinals would steer clear of it. And he'll probably end up in the division because that's just their luck.
Yeah.
Bob Costas and his relationship with NBC over 40 years at one network, now over. The role had been diminished over the years, but Bob Costas is a divisive figure. He's become very outspoken politically over the last several years. That's turned some people off. But in terms of sheer broadcast quality and ability,
yeah,
he's right up there at the top of the list, don't
uh-huh.
you think?
Oh, without a doubt. Smooth, smart, opinionated.
Were you a fan?
I liked him.
Yeah,
yeah, I wasn't.
Other broadcasting news also, Marty Brenneman announced his retirement.
Did he really?
The Reds, yep.
Wow, how long had he been on that job?
A very long time. And also, there was some other guy I wrote that also a longtime broadcaster. And I can't find it. Forget it. But there was...
Jared's having one of those days. Sounds like me back there. I had it right here and I lost it. Marty Brenneman, I only met him once in person. Couldn't have been nicer.
Yeah.
I was a spring training broadcaster for 3 years for the Oakland A's. And he came into the booth one day, and I got introduced to him, and he took time to ask me questions about the job and how things were going and what I did for a living and all that stuff. Couldn't have been nicer. It was so intimidating one time. I don't know why I'm just going down memory lane now.
Mm-hmm.
So I would do these games mostly by myself. The regular broadcasters for the A's, Ken Korak and Vince Catronio, would come in and do an inning here or there, but they didn't. They were there just basically to watch and prepare for the weekend radio broadcast because my broadcasts were only over the internet. So there was one day, I forget which stadium we were at, but it was a really big broadcast booth. And both Vince and Ken were in there, and there was like three or four other major league broadcasters just sitting in there while I'm doing the game.
Yeah.
And they're having a conversation on the other side of the booth. It was so intimidating.
Yeah, I know.
These guys probably think I stink.
Now, so what we did, no, you're right about
Steve
that.
Steve Blass was the other guy.
Steve Blass. Oh,
he's retiring after the year.
After
this year.
Okay.
Remember that Pirates team?
Oh, I do. Oh, I do. Who else? All right, never mind.
Willie Stargell.
The genesis of all this was, give me your five favorite broadcasters of all time. Can you do it? Do you know who they are?
Bickley and Murata present Top 5.
Wow, this is a loaded question.
All right, you want me to do my five?
Yes.
Descending order, number five, John Madden. Brought that Ron Wolfley boom, bang, ow, stuff to football. Okay? Number four, Mike Doc Emmerich, who does NHL games like nobody I've ever heard in my life. Number three, Vin Scully, just for his polish. Could go weeks without making a mistake. Number two, Charles Barkley.
Paul Goldschmidt.
Oh, yeah, that too. And number one, gee, I wonder who this is going to be, Mr. Chicago, Harry Carey, who I just told
you. Oh, I thought you were going to go with Hawk Harrelson.
No. Harry Carey, who is so ill-prepared on the X's and O's of broadcasting that he would often say, there's a man racing for home.
Hey! Check out the kid with the sombrero.
Well, tell you about it in a minute.
Wouldn't even know the guy. There's a man racing for third. Love Harry Carey. Who's your top five?
No particular order. Phoenix growing up, how do you not include Dal McCoy? More local flavor. Tom Dillon. I was a huge fan of Tom Dillon. Nationally, be hard not to put Barkley in there for entertainment value. A guy that was like a punchline. When I was growing up, I was young when Howard Cosell was at the end of his career. But he was like a running joke just because of the style. Never appreciated him for how brilliant he was as a broadcaster.
Yeah.
He was tremendous. I wish I had more access to actually go back and watch him. Who else?
I would have liked to have had a lot of exposure to Bob Uecker, but I don't. Mostly from movies and Miller Lite commercials.
I do wonder, like, he calls games pretty straight, though, right?
Straighter than his persona.
Right. He's not like the guy in Major League or...
But he's not the antithesis either.
I think the character in Major League is just kind of Bob Uecker on steroids.
Right.
That's probably the direction he got for that movie.
Norm MacDonald and Artie Lang tell stories about sitting in the booth
with
Bob Uecker.
It's hilarious.
Really?
And how he was a master with the cough button so he could make off-color remarks about people in the crowd and what was going on.
You got to be real careful of that.
Yes.
You talk about verbal Russian roulette. All right. Anybody else?
Costas wouldn't crack my top. Al Michaels. How could Al Michaels not be on the list? ASU grad, by the way.
Where do you guys stand on Joe Buck?
I like Joe Buck.
I don't dislike him the way a lot of people do. It doesn't matter what sport he's doing. Golf, baseball, football. If you do a Twitter search on Joe Buck while he's on the air working, oh my good.
Really? So he's polarizing is what you say.
Can I also say Dave Pasch to me?
Yeah.
Because for him to be the sort of straight man to Wolf and to Bill Walton and still be such a great play-by-play broadcaster is pretty impressive.
Yeah, he's one of my favorites right now, certainly. Eric suggested Jim Brockmeyer.
Bingo! Bingo!
Did you ever watch season two of that show?
Look, I saw one episode that in the whole thing started to veer in some weird darkness, and I backed away from the show. And I should go back, but I backed away from it.
It was a dark show.
Now, I need, in my reincarnation as Couch Potato, I need a show to watch. So you vote for you?
Yes.
Okay.
Vote for me.
Vote for you.
I'm not through the first season yet, but I really enjoy it.
All right.
Bring five or more non-perishable food items to Talking Stick Resort Arena on January 22nd. You'll receive two tickets to the Suns versus Timberwolves game that night. Text the word HUNGER 620 to 62620 for complete details on the Fry's Food Stores and Phoenix Suns Zero Hunger game benefiting Phoenix Suns charities. Once again, that's text HUNGER to 620-620. Coming up, not only was it a bad night for the Suns, The Pacers fans had some not-so-nice things to say about Kelly Oubre Jr. We'll get into that and more next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Murata, Song of the Day. Brought to you by Vital 4 Men. Sometimes you want to hit rewind. Now you can with Vital 4 Men. Find out more at vital4men.com.
Closing time. Open all the doors and let you out into the world.
Who sang this again?
Semisonic? I think the group was called A Bunch of Losers.
Oh, jeez. Semisonic, yes.
For a one-hit wonder, this is really pandery, isn't it? They had to know this was going to be played at the... In the 90s, this was played at every bar at 1 a.m. in Phoenix, Arizona. And yes, the closing time used to be 1 a.m. I mean, I heard that this was the case. I wasn't actually there.
You never quite experienced that, did you?
Not a fan of this song, huh?
No, it's awful.
Sarah Cazell nodding in approval. This is an awful song.
It is amazing, though. There are certain songs that you're like... Like that Hall of Fame song. Living in the Hall of Fame or whatever that song
is. Oh, yeah.
They had to have known that's going to be used in every montage for every Hall of Fame ceremony.
Smash Mouth, All Star.
Right. Or any song about a city.
Yes. The reason why we're playing it, not just to irk Dan Bickley and Sarah Cazell and most of our listener base, but closing time was the content of a tweet sent out by one Archie Bradley. And what was the emoji he used? There was an emoji attached to it as well. It was like a traffic sign or something.
Yeah, with the yellow triangle with an exclamation point in the middle, like caution, I guess.
Is that? I was trying to figure out what that was. Caution to opposing hitters. Or caution to Diamondbacks fans. We can read between the lines. That's what people do when cryptic tweets are sent. Is Archie Bradley the closer? Makes the most sense, doesn't it? Boxberger's gone. Pirano's still around. He makes the most sense to start the season as the closer.
Well, it makes sense if you believe like I do that your closer has to have something, some force of personality. Remember Al Hrabowski. Remember the Mad Hungarian?
Mad
Hungarian. He was unbelievable. I was watching a clip of the Mad Hungarian. He got into this argument with umpire. He kept throwing the ball back for a new ball. And finally, this ump got just ticked and rolled it to him. And then Al Hrabowski rolled it back to the ump. Then the ump took a ball and threw it like in a center field. It was so great.
The Mad Hungarian, what a great nickname, right?
Oh, it is.
And Archie, you talk about players got to have something.
Yeah.
He's got something.
I pooped my pants.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, if Al Hrabowski played today, you know what his nickname would be? Bosky.
Yes, you're right. Let's hope that
or Allie.
Let's hope with Archie Bradley that the literal doesn't become the figurative in 2019.
Yeah. I pooped my pants.
Don't want that to be happening.
Diamondbacks have also signed Wilmer Flores, formerly of the New York Mets.
Oh yeah,
yeah. This
Wilmer Valderrama.
We know Bickley gets it.
Wilmer.
Bickley gets distracted by the shiny object, and a lot of times it's what's on TV. But this one's
great.
Good.
There was a guy.
There's bowling on one of our TVs right now.
Yeah, right. And so one of these dorks is. He's left a lot of splits out there. Okay?
A bunch of losers and dorks.
One of these dorks has left a lot of splits.
Bum.
And he's a bum. And they showed highlights of a guy who once set the lowest record for televised score in bowling.
Yeah, that's the graphic they put under his name on the screen.
It was 100. 100. The guy had 7 splits and bowled 100. Do you know what his opponent bowled in that match? 299.
Oh, that would be me. I'm a terrible
That's unbelievable.
I'm a terrible bowler. Are you good at bowling?
Yeah. I'm like, billiards and bowling are the same with me. I can have games where I look good in games and I'm just awful.
I was just going to say, billiards and bowling to me, everyone is about the same.
Yeah.
There's like a little bit of a range where you're either like a little bit better or a little bit worse, but almost everybody.
Bit worse than everybody at both of those.
If you ever meet someone who's really, really, really bad at either... It's kind of striking or really, really, really good at either.
Good point.
It is a good point.
All right, last night, adding insult to injury, not only did the Suns get blown out by the Pacers, but here's what the Pacers crowd, you would think they're nice, middle of the country, down to earth, heartland kind of people. They were saying hurtful things to Kelly Oubre Jr.
And Suns continue to struggle from the free throw line. Now 4 of 9.
Yeah, and you just don't expect it from this guy in particular.
That was Ann Myers Drysdale, Kevin Ray on the call on Fox Sports Arizona. In the background, you could hear the fans chanting, John Wall hates you.
Isn't that outstanding? John Wall hates you.
All right, what's a better taunting chant from recently? That or the Brooklyn fans laying into Kyrie or laying into the Celtics by saying, Kyrie's leaving?
That's better. I like that one better because John Wall's... He hates a lot of people, as you pointed out.
And John Wall, I mean, it's probably a badge of honor.
Probably a badge of honor, right? If you're the Boston Celtics, you're full of pride. Everybody wants to play for us. Kyrie's leaving.
One of the things I like about Kelly Oubre Jr. being on the Suns is he is one of those get under your skin, you hate him when he's on the other team, but you love him when he's on yours kind of guy. And the Suns haven't had one of those guys in a while.
Yeah, it's true. It's a good point.
They had the opposite kind of guy.
Yeah. You hate him when he's on your team, and you love him when he's on another one.
That's right. Yeah. Right. Right.
Every good team's got one of those guys.
Yeah, no.
That's one box checked. Did you see the story about Austin becoming the 27th team in MLS? Phoenix has been passed over on this round of expansion.
I did not see that. Yeah. Is that right?
The Columbus Crew... They were going to relocate to Austin. Instead, the Cleveland Browns bought the Crew to keep them in Ohio, and MLS countered by giving Austin an expansion franchise. So,
why wouldn't they go Phoenix, Arizona?
I think Austin was further on in the process than Phoenix was.
27 teams, wow.
Yeah, they're going to continue to expand.
All these years later.
Did you see Jim Harbaugh? Hard on the recruiting trail, offered a scholarship to Isaiah Marshall, a quarterback. What makes this noteworthy? He's in seventh grade.
Oh, come on.
When does it stop?
That also, stuff is so ridiculous.
Wanted to touch on this, too. Kevin Seifert, NFL Nation on ESPN.com, put out the 50 top free agents to hit the market in the NFL. Not surprisingly, not a whole lot of Cardinals on that list. Deon Buchanan came in at number 39, highest ranked Cardinal free agent.
Ahead of Marcus Golden?
And Marcus Golden came in on the page that I can't get to, number 47.
Okay, because
those are the only two in the top 50.
So I was going to say, if you pulled Cardinal fans, who would you want back? I think most would say Golden over Buchanan.
I would agree with that. That's going to do it for us. Thanks to our guest, Paul Bissonnette, Mark Slayer. Thanks to you for listening. Vic, have a great day. You too. Burns and Gambo up next, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.